Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Ranking of the Stars, a podcast in which I, Jack D'Lo Boblick, and my lovely, luscious, late-night rendezvous wife...
Hi, I'm Emmeline D'Lo Boblick.
Watch in chronological order every single movie that has won the Oscar for Best Picture. And this week's movie is the same as last week's movie, which is...
Lawrence of Arabia.
Which I already gave an alternate title, so you get nothing this week.
Well, actually, also, this was 2 weeks ago, because we didn't record last week.
Yep. We fell into an alternate dimension. We slipped on a banana peel and we fell into the Grand Canyon. Sorry. It took a while to get out.
So this is part two of Lawrence of Arabia today.
Yep. Fun facts.
New characters and actors first.
New characters and actors.
Sort of.
We get Mr. Bentley.
Yeah. The first one that I didn't mention last time is we have Claude Rains, who plays Mr. Dryden in this movie.
Who?
And the entire time we were watching the movie, I was like, I know this face, but I couldn't pinpoint who it was.
Is that the guy?
And Claude Rains was the inspector in Casablanca.
Mm. The Frenchman... The unscrupulous Frenchman?
Yes.
Is he the man in the suit?
Yes, he's okay. The man in the suit.
Wow.
I wrote in here, like, his job and his title are unclear throughout the whole movie. He just seems to... He's only seen with the generals.
He's an evil kingmaker.
Okay. I saw him, like, as a wealthy advisor.
He's someone very high up in politics and is, like, he's the puppet master pulling strings.
Okay.
Is my interpretation of him.
Yeah, because we never really get to know, like, who he is, what he does, really.
The general's asking his advice, yeah. So...
Yeah. But he's not part of the military, is
no.
My point. Like, he's not wearing a uniform.
I assumed he was some sort of liaison between the politicians in whatever their version of Washington is and the army.
Yeah.
Yep.
That would make sense. Then we have Arthur Kennedy, who plays Jackson Bentley. He was a journalist from Chicago who followed Lawrence and made him famous.
Yep. Looking for a good story.
Yeah. And then the last character I put on here is Michelle Ray plays Farage. He's the second young servant who, like, offers his services to Lawrence in the first part of the movie.
The one who survived the first part.
We'll
see if he survives the second.
Fun facts. I have one fun fact for right now and then two that I'm going to keep for the end.
Okay. So for now, fun fact.
Fun fact.
Later, fun facts.
Exactly.
Spoiler facts. That's why we have to save them.
Spoiler. There was a 1990 movie made for TV. That was entitled A Dangerous Man, Lawrence After Arabia.
Oh, After Arabia. All right. Postscript. I see. Was it a multi-part or just a one and done?
I think it, as far as I understand, it was just a one and done.
Yeah.
And it had Ralph Fiennes as Lawrence of Arabia.
I feel like, maybe it's just because I don't watch TV anymore, but I feel like that was a real thing in the 90s, was those big, like, multi-part TV dramas.
Oh, definitely. You remember who Ralph Fiennes is?
Ralph Fiennes? Is he in Grand Budapest Hotel?
Yeah.
That guy.
He's also the guy who plays Voldemort.
Yep. He was in the made-for-TV thing?
He played Lawrence in the in the TV movie.
I can see it.
Yeah.
I can see it.
Yeah.
Shares a little bit of DNA. The main character, Monsieur Gustave, shares a little bit of DNA with Lawrence.
I think so. The eccentricity is definitely there.
Slightly feminine, but also brutally masculine when he needs to be.
Yeah. And Alexander Zidek played Prince Faisal.
Faisal, yep.
Yeah.
In brownface.
Alexander Zidek, some people might recognize him. He was Doran Martell in Game of Thrones. I think he was only in, like, season 2 or 3.
I read all those books. I have no idea who you're talking about.
He gets killed fairly quickly. He's okay. Only in one season in Game of Thrones.
Does he get burned up by a dragon?
No, I think his skull gets crushed by the mountain.
Ah, yeah, I have no idea then.
Well. All right, that's it for me.
That's it?
Yes.
The plot already?
The plot.
All right. We're only 5 minutes into this. I'm not prepared. We return to a reporter arriving in an Arabian town and asking a passerby where he can find Prince Faisal. This is Mr. Bentley.
Mm-hmm.
Cut to the reporter meeting with Faisal and asking where he can find Major Lawrence. Well, Mr. Bentley, says Faisal, you will find Major Lawrence with my army. Where can I find your army? I don't know, says Faisal. Last he heard, they were in...
Malal?
Malal?
Mm-hmm.
Can you ride a camel? He asked Mr. Bentley. No, take a mule. The prince, however, is going to Cairo.
Yep.
This will be important later. There is work for him there of a different kind, he says. The reporter says he's heard they have no artillery, and the prince confirms that. It keeps them limited to small things, he says. It's intended to, replies Bentley. Prince pauses for a moment and then asks if he knows General Allenby. Bentley does, and he tells the prince to watch out for him. He's a clever man. He says a colloquialism like he's a slim customer or something.
Yeah.
And the prince has to be like, what does that mean? And he, it means to watch out for him. And the prince laughs and says, slim customer, that's a good one. Yuck, yuck, yuck. Prince is surprised that Bentley is so sympathetic to the Arabs' cause, and Bentley tells him it's because we Americans were once a colonial people and feel for any people struggling for their freedom. And then a bald eagle flies behind him and explodes into red, white, and blue. I don't think that shit would play nowadays.
No, like watching it as a, you know, as a 2000-something audience, like it did not ring true at all to me.
We're a colonial people and damn proud of it. Woof! Aged like milk. Very gratifying, says the prince. Bentley then admits that his interest is in having a story to tell, just as the prince is interested in having his story told. The prince smiles and says, now Bentley is talking turkey. Don't give me all this you love freedom nonsense.
Talking turkey?
Yeah, telling the truth, I think, is what he means.
Okay.
Now you're spitting game, something like that.
That's an odd way to say it.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that one before, but I just kind of pieced it together through context. Sure, Prince, sure. Prince will give him a letter of introduction, a guide, and some facts and figures put on paper. You know, of course, Mr. Bentley, that my armies are destroying Turkish railways. Mr. Bentley does know that, and he asks if Lawrence is in charge of the operation. Faisal says that each tribe has its own leader. Your people respect him, though, don't they? Faisal agrees that they do, because in his country, the man who can deliver victory is prized above all others, he says. The prince then says he will give one figure to Bentley that is always in his head. They have 4 times as many casualties as they do wounded, because they never leave wounded behind for the Turks to capture. The Turks consider them rebels, and rebels aren't protected by the Geneva Convention, so prisoners are treated harshly.
Which means essentially they're either enslaved or they're killed.
Or both. The Arabs treat Turkish prisoners more kindly because mercy is a passion for Major Lawrence. For the prince, it is merely good manners. That was such a... Man, the fact that you can just say, well, we don't consider them soldiers, sir, they're not under the rules about how you treat soldiers. Holy shit. The legalization, the hand-waving of like, oh, they're... You can just categorize them as something else so that you can just treat them however you want. Jesus.
I wonder, yeah, you're talking about like the legality of it. Like it's, how legal really that is. Especially with everything that is incorporated in the Geneva Convention.
Anything is legal if there's nobody around to stop you, right?
I guess.
This reminds me of...
If you don't get caught, it doesn't exist.
The way the Germans got around the no mustard gas rule was by just going to places where the wind was blowing in the direction they wanted the gas to go and just opening the containers and letting the wind carry it.
Yep.
Always a fucking loophole. The monsters will find a way. And he says that for the prince, it is merely good manners, and he will let Mr. Bentley judge which is the more pure motive, he says. The prince then says it's time for him to go. But before he does, he asks Bentley to be honest about his interest in this conflict, what his interest in Lawrence is. Bentley replies that certain influential men are thinking it's time for America to put its weight in the fight against Germany. And to make that idea more palatable to the public, they need a heroic figure to sell the adventure of war to people. Narrative control. Glad that don't happen no more.
Just the fact that he calls it the adventure or war, like spoken like somebody who hasn't seen combat at all, because war is not an adventure. It's not something that you joyfully join.
The only people that romanticize it are the people who haven't seen it.
Yep.
So he says that's why he wants Lawrence, and the prince replies, Lawrence is your man. We then cut to an explosion derailing a train in the desert. We've seen a lot of trains get fucked up in this podcast.
Yeah.
Here's another. This movie, there's probably more trains fucked up in this movie than the entire rest of the movies we've watched. So an explosion derails a train in the desert, and then a line of Arab gunmen who are taking cover on a nearby sand dune open fire on the train as it lies like a beached whale in the sand. They're just on top of the dune, just on their bellies with their rifles poking over the top of it, and they all just start dumping lead into it.
Yep.
Lawrence eventually calls for the men to stop. They ignore him at first. He runs out in front of them. Yeah. No one listens. He runs out in front of them, and he shoots a flare and calls for them to charge. They charge, and the looting begins. We get a little montage of them just, like, picking people's watches out of corpses and stuff, and just taking all the loot out and putting it in the sand like it's a garage sale or something. The Arab soldiers spread their newly acquired treasures on the ground as Lawrence climbs on top of the wreckage to survey the scene. And in the smoking ruins, a lone Turkish survivor takes aim at Lawrence with his gun and fires, hitting Lawrence in the arm and knocking him to the ground. He, like, spins around a little bit, does a little West Side Story pirouette, and falls off the train when he gets hit. Lawrence stands up and looks at the shooter, who continues to fire, missing every shot. I thought he was going to start, like, walking towards the guy.
I thought so, too.
Yeah, it was going to be one of those intimidation things where, like, oh, he's so scary, the guy can't even aim right, and he just keeps missing. He's too damn spooky. But he doesn't. He just stares at him, and the guy misses. Tai then appears behind the soldier and kills him with his sword. You don't get to see it. He just chops down off screen, and the crisis is averted. Bentley then pops up next to Lawrence and says he's never seen a man killed with a sword before. Tai then approaches and asks angrily if Bentley took his picture. Bentley says yes, and Tai grabs his camera and smashes it.
Yeah, somebody else says that Tai thinks that by taking pictures, like, he's stealing something from him. He's stealing his soul or something?
I think they said honor.
Stealing his honor.
Yeah, it's like the Native American thing where they believed it was you're stealing your soul if you take a picture. It's something in that same wheelhouse.
Yeah.
It's removing something from him, so he doesn't like it, and he smashes the camera, which Bentley seems to give no shit about.
He had another one.
Yeah, he had another one, so he was just completely calm about it. Like, no reaction at all.
Yeah.
Lawrence then climbs back up on the train and struts around while the Arab soldiers chant his name. He just, like, walks with his arms out, his robes billowing in the wind, slowly just struts on top of this train. Lawrence! Lawrence! Everybody loves him.
He's the hero.
He's the hero. He got them their sweet loot. Cut to Sharif and the British officer walking through the looting soldiers. This is the British officer Lawrence first encountered in that canyon where he was shouting and it was echoing.
Brighton,
that's his name. Yep. I always just call him the officer. I did not know his... I watched this movie twice. I never knew his name.
Officer Brighton.
Officer Brighton tells Sharif, this shit has got to stop. It's customary, says Sharif. It's theft, replies Brighton. He's a Boy Scout, so he's not down with all this pillaging of corpses and whatnot.
Well, it's just two different perspectives and two different cultural perspectives, because yeah, Sharif says it's customary because that's the ways in Arabia where they are, and then of course the British soldier is not going to see it the same way.
Yeah, you're right. That's a lot of the roots of this movie is the, oh, this simply isn't done, and then the other person going, it's always been done this way. What are you talking about? They approach Lawrence, now leaning against a car, because they have this, they don't have a tank, but they have an armored car with them that has a gun turret on the top of it. They wouldn't give them artillery, but they can have this armored car. He's leaning against that car, and the officer tells him that this is a group he's seen the last of, now that they've got what they've came for, because I think there's people already, like, actively leaving as he's walking through them. They'll come back, says Lawrence. How many men do you have left? 200? Less, replies Lawrence. But I said they'll come back. The officer then sees Lawrence's bullet wound and asks if he's hurt. Lawrence replies that he's not hurt at all. He climbs up into the turret of the car and says he can only be killed by a golden bullet or a very low-speed motorcycle crash. Sometime later, Lawrence and his forces have made camp, and as Lawrence sits in the shade reading, Bentley approaches and says he has two questions for Lawrence before he returns to the flesh pots, he says. The first question, what, in your opinion, do these people hope to gain from this war? They hope to gain their freedom, says Lawrence quietly, and they're going to get it, Mr. Bentley. I'm going to give it to them.
Single-handedly.
Mm-hmm. Lawrence is the hero. He's writing his own story.
Yeah.
Second question. What is it, Major Lawrence, that attracts you to the desert? Lawrence's answer is two words. It's clean. A very illuminating answer, says Bentley, and takes one last picture of Lawrence. What do you think he means when he says it's clean?
Honestly, I haven't thought about it.
My reading of it was that he means it's free of politics and, like, social games, and people are more honest out there.
I mean, politics maybe, but there's still, like, a lot of, if not social games, like, very cultural games. Because you have all these tribes who are still, instead of working together to get their freedom, they are destroying each other.
Yeah, they all hate each other and can't get along.
Minor cultural differences.
Yep.
So I don't know that it's the lack of politics or social games, but yeah, maybe like you said, maybe the fact that the people are more honest and they don't think if they're gonna kill each other, they're just gonna kill each other.
Yep.
That's just the almost the law of the jungle.
Yeah, they might be stabbing you, but at least they're being honest, right?
Yeah.
the brutality is a refreshing change of pace from all the masks and lying in 40 chess you have to play back in society.
Yeah.
Then we cut to Taiyi showing off a clock he just traded two sheep for to the officer and Sharif, his big-ass clock. But he can't make it work, so he smashes it and says he must find something honorable. He just, like, bangs on it. He's like, it doesn't work, and then just smashes it.
Yeah.
Must find something honorable. Then we jump to the next train attack, which is a train loaded with horses. They don't blow this one up and derail it because it's got horses on it, and they can't.
Yeah, they're coming for the horses.
They can't hurt the horses, but they do manage to kill all the soldiers without wounding a single horse, and then take all the horses for themselves. I got a little, I don't know what to label it, but like just watching those horses jump out of the car they were in, because it's like a little, they just got like a railing up that can go down to let them get out of it.
Yeah.
And it was, I don't know, like not that far to the ground, but like just enough to when those horses jumped down, like, oof. Those are big animals. Like,
well, and also they're jumping, they're getting off the train and they're jumping in sand. So it's not like there's solid ground for them. Yeah. It's just going to be like just really fucking hard for them to move, because as they're moving, they're getting down, like they're not paws, their legs are kind of they're sinking.
Yeah.
So it's just that it makes it that much harder for them to advance.
Yeah, it's probably not even 10 feet, but look, man, those horses are big.
Yeah.
They weigh like 60,000 pounds at least. Each one of them horses probably weighs more than a train. I don't even know how they're transporting them. It spooked me a little bit. That's all I'm saying. I'm worried about those horses' knees.
Yeah, I was glad that they did not shoot anywhere like near the horses, because I'm always, it always makes me sad in movies, like when they show, like, and yeah, I know the horses are not getting killed for real, but you know when they're supposed to be getting injured and they trip and all that, like it just makes me so uncomfortable.
Yeah, there's a horse trip later on that's not great.
Yeah.
Yeah, run over all the people you want. Leave the horses and camels alone, please. Tai grabs a particularly fine horse for himself, of course, and then rides up to Lawrence, Sharif, and Officer Brighton, right?
Mm-hmm.
And tells them with a laugh that he's going home. He has found the honorable thing, the horse.
Yeah. He found a white horse.
Yeah, a white steed.
Yeah.
The kind of horse that Donkey turned into in the second Shrek. The officer responds and says that Lawrence will be campaigning again in the winter, but Tai has what he wants, so he's leaving. Is that it? Tai replies that they will all go home when they get what they want, so he's no different from anyone else.
Yeah.
The absolute truth. I shan't, says the officer. This is how proper he is British. I shan't. Mm. Then you are a fool, says Tai. It's better than being a deserter, the officer replies. Tai turns to Lawrence, who's also there listening, and tells him he must go before he soils himself with a fool's blood and rides away.
And that's another thing that I feel the British soldier here doesn't understand, is like he's comparing them to deserters without understanding that they're not military soldiers.
Yeah.
They're soldiers of their own for their own tribe and for their own cause, but they're not military soldiers. There's no fucking order over their heads.
Yeah, it's like, look, Eagle Scout, I don't glorify licking boots the way same you do. I got my sweet ass horse. I'm out of here. And you would be too if you were being honest.
Yeah. It was shocking almost just to see, like, this guy has been spending so much time with the Arab tribes, but he still has no understanding of them.
No, he's making no attempt to understanding the difference between him and Lawrence.
Yeah.
He has a white knuckle grip on his own cultural values and can see nothing else.
On his own whiteness? I thought that's what you were going to say.
Sure. Then we jump to Lawrence and his men, setting up the explosives for the next train attack. Then the remaining servant boy, what was his name?
Farage.
Putting a detonator inside his robe as he helps to set up the explosive. They hear the train approaching, and Lawrence asks the boy for the detonator. He can't find it, though, so Lawrence sends him to fetch another. But the boy trips and falls, causing the one that he had in his robe to explode and wound him in the side.
I did not understand the mechanics of that.
It wasn't very well done, this scene. He did not put it in a difficult place to find in his robes.
No, he's like put it on his flank here.
Yeah, just right on his belt. And he doesn't even try to look for it for like more than 3 seconds before he's like, oh, no, I can't find the thing I just put in my belt a second ago. And then Lauren sends him to get another one. And then he trips and falls off screen. You don't even see it. You just hear the bang. And then Lawrence to get up to see what happened. And I guess he fell and impacted it. And that caused it to go off.
Mm-hmm.
It's that volatile. I don't know. I don't deal with these explosives. I don't know how hard the sand is. It seems a little iffy, but I'm not a doctor. It has to happen for the plot, so sure. The men gather around him, and after inspecting his wound, one tells Lawrence that there's no way he can ride. Sharif looks at Lawrence and tells him he knows what the Turks will do if they take him. Lawrence pulls out his gun and tosses it into the sand, but the men shake their heads and back away. The sounds of the approaching train are getting louder, so Lawrence picks up the gun and lays next to the boy, placing the gun against his head. The boy says that Daoud, the other servant boy, will be angry with Lawrence, and Lawrence tells him to salute Daoud for him and fires the gun. You don't get to see that either. It happens off screen.
Yeah.
Fade to Lawrence riding a camel and looking despondent as Sharif asks him what he will do next. "What do you suggest I do?" snaps Lawrence. "What do you suggest?" I don't know, man. They didn't try very hard to save him. Like...
Well, we also don't see, like, the extent of his wounds.
Yeah.
They examine him, but, like, kind of over his clothes, we don't really get to see... We don't really see blood. We don't really see, like, the extent of how wounded he is. I'm assuming that because the wound is on his, like, stomach, that it probably is, like, ripping him, like, his intestines and stuff like that, and that he's just not going to be able to, A, stand up on his own or travel on his own, and that he would just, like, slow people down.
I mean, you throw him over the back of a camel like you did with Ghassim when you brought him out of the desert. They didn't even fucking try. I mean, I'm not saying you don't get to the gunshot to the head eventually, but it shouldn't be your first step.
Yeah.
God damn.
I think because the train was coming so fast.
Yeah,
it was either...
The window was closing.
Yeah, the window was closing. Either they were going to get more people killed or they just get one.
Yep. So the second servant boy is gone.
Yeah.
It did not last very long at all. Very unceremonious end for him.
I felt bad. I felt like when he said, Daoud is going to be angry with you. Oh, I felt that.
We're on the reverse. Usually I feel things and you don't. I felt nothing. It was, a brutal thing to do, but I don't know. Could have tried a little harder.
Yeah.
That's why it missed for me. And then Lawrence is upset about it. Then we get a quick scene of the British officer talking to the British general in an opulent study lit by a fireplace. I don't know where the fuck they are when they're doing this. They kind of fudge distances a lot in this movie. A lot like Star Wars again, where they're just like, oh, we need to be on this planet. And then they're just on that planet and it takes 0 seconds to get there.
Yeah.
The British officer especially seems like he can just teleport wherever he needs to. He can be in Cairo 1 second and then teleport like deep into the desert to talk to Lawrence and then teleport back to the general. And it takes, there's no travel time. He's just where he needs to be. So God knows where he is right now, but he's talking to the British general in a very opulent study lit by a big fireplace. And the general wants to know if Lawrence is going native, he says. The officer doesn't think so. Will the Arabs he lost come back? The officer thinks they will. They consider him some kind of prophet, after all. They do, or he does? Asked the general. Whatever the case, the Turks have put a $20,000 bounty on his head. And the general wonders if he would get that high of a price. Mm. The general then rises from his chair and says he's making his push for Damascus. We rejoin Lawrence in a rocky cave at night as Sharif tells him that he has one more failure before he will find himself alone, though Sharif makes sure to point out he doesn't mean himself. Everyone else will abandon you, but not me, says Sharif.
But I can also feel like Sharif is getting, he's getting sick of the shit. Like, he's getting tired of, like, losing the man and all that. Like, I feel like he's trying to, like, soften the landing of what he's saying, but... You can see he's getting tired of it.
He's definitely getting frustrated with Lawrence's bullshit.
Yeah.
But also, like, he only failed once. Like, goddamn.
Well, he only failed once that we saw.
Yeah, we saw. Yeah, need a little more before I buy in. You're not selling it hard enough, movie. Lawrence must give them something they are capable of doing instead of asking them to move mountains and walk on water, he says.
That's an interesting, reference, the moving mountains and walk on water. It's an interesting reference for a Muslim to make.
Yeah, Jesus. You're trying to be Jesus. I know what you're doing. Lawrence angrily asks who Sharif is to decide what can and can't be done. If they had listened to Sharif, they would be back in Yenbo right now under the rule of the British. Does he think Lawrence is just anybody? Lawrence is high on his own supply.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely, it's starting to come out very strongly.
Uh-huh, I told you.
It was a little more subtle than in the first part of the movie, and this time around, the second part is like, it's coming out strong.
Lawrence has got some hard main character syndrome. Lawrence then enters a different chamber of the cave that they're in, where the rest of the men are cleaning their guns and resting, and ask who wants to walk on water with him, with a flourish. Who will come with him to Dara? Dara is garrisoned, one replies. You'd take 20 against 2,000? He's only got 20 people left at this point? Woof.
Yeah.
That's grim. I'll go by myself if I have to, says Lawrence, because he told the British generals that the Arab revolt would be in Dara by the time that they, the British, were in Jerusalem. This afternoon he will take the Arab revolt to Dara while the Arabs sit and argue. Cut to Lawrence and Sharif in Dara, so he got Sharif to come with him at least. Sharif tells Lawrence that this is madness and asks what he's looking for. Some way to announce myself, says Lawrence. And this, it's a super run-down town. Like, the buildings are in disrepair. There's, like, big-ass puddles in the street. And we see a Turkish general ride by in a car when we're being introduced to the town.
Yeah.
Just drives by Lawrence. So it's an occupied town where, you know, the military is taking care of their own, but all the populace is, like, living in slums and and disrepair and whatnot.
Before they even go to Dara, you remember what some of the Arab soldiers are asking him? They're like, can you pass as an Arab?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, if you give me some dirty clothes.
Yeah, give me some dirty robes and I can do it well enough. Rub some sand on my face and keep my head down. Lawrence says he's looking for some way to announce himself, and Sharif looks to the sky and asks God to be patient with Lawrence. I know, Lord, I know. He pisses me off too. Just keep it together. They walk through the town and pass by a guard patrol who yells at them to stop. Lawrence does not stop. Keep walking, he says to Sharif. This, of course, pisses the guards off, and they arrest Lawrence and bring him before the Turkish officer, where he is tortured and then thrown into the street. This was...
But they don't arrest Sharif.
No, they don't take Sharif. They just take Lawrence, and this was a weird scene.
I did not understand the point of that scene.
The point, and I only know this because I read up on Lawrence a little more on Wikipedia and whatnot, is that... There are suspicions
that he was gay,
Yes, that he was a closet homosexual. Yeah. And not just that, but was very much into like BDSM and being dominated and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what this scene is trying to hint at. Because at first he's lined up in a group of other prisoners. And then the general or head officer or whatever he does comes out and just like walks slowly up and down inspecting the prisoners. And he dismisses everyone else but Lawrence.
Yeah.
And then he rips Lawrence's shirt off and like starts to like rub his skin essentially. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, you have very fair skin. And then you get a close up shot of like the general like licking his lips.
Yeah.
And then Lawrence headbutts him because he's scared of the gay thoughts. And then he gets tortured. And then during the torture scene, like the general retreats to his office, but then opens the door a crack. And you get a shot from Lawrence's perspective of just the general like standing in the doorway with his shirt off, but wife beater, just watching Lawrence get tortured. So it's a weird like psychosexual domination thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really took a turn with that scene.
That was one of the, not fun facts, but, like, one of the things I wanted to talk about after the synopsis is, like, I did read that that Peter O'Toole's portrayal of Lawrence is, like, has been considered very effeminate and also more... Meant to hint at his homosexuality.
Oh yeah, it's they're not subtle.
Yeah,
there are times where he just like minces when he walks.
Yeah, but like, what does it do for the movie? Like, it doesn't add anything to me to the plot of the movie.
I think it's just showing what a complex and at odds person Lawrence with was himself.
Like, sure, but it doesn't add to me. Like, it doesn't add anything really to the movie or to his character. Like, I honestly don't care if.
It's just revealing how conflicted he is about, like, his own nature. Like, because you get the close-up shot of the general licking his lips, and it freaks Lawrence out that he likes it, right? So he reacts violently to it. So just how uncomfortable he is with his own desires, I think, is the point.
Sure.
It felt, that sequence was weird. And it only made sense because he allegedly had those things in real life. I also read, unconfirmed, who knows, but allegedly, the real-life Sharif, one of the claims is that he paid the real-life Sharif to just beat him. So, this is some really bleak aspects to Lawrence.
Yeah.
And that's what it's trying to hint at. And then, the torture that we see isn't even that severe. I wouldn't want to go through it or want anyone
he's being whipped.
Like to go through it, but it's pretty mild BDSM, like, just a rod that they're whacking him on the back with.
Yeah.
Can't get too crazy.
But my point here was also, like, it doesn't add anything to the revolt. It doesn't, like, I thought they were going to accomplish something by going to Dara, and it accomplishes absolutely nothing.
You're right. I don't know what that whole Dara sequence adds anything to the plot. Like, I thought he had a plan.
Yeah,
when
he was
when he was being brought in front of the general, like, oh, he's gonna, like, offer him a deal or something.
Yeah.
And then he just has no plan and gets tortured. And it's like, what the fuck did you think was gonna happen, Lawrence?
Yeah, otherwise, like, what's the point of the line when he says, oh, I'm just trying to find a way to announce myself? Then clearly, if you're trying to announce yourself, then you have something in mind that you're coming for, right?
I think it goes back to the fact that we were talking about, like, Lawrence. He believes his own bullshit, right? So he thinks he's the main character. He thinks he's going to just walk in and be able to do these things that no one else can do.
Yeah.
And then he keeps having these instances where he keeps attempting that and then running into just the hard reality and getting super depressed about the hard reality and the ugliness he encounters when he makes those attempts. The officer also has this line. He's like he has this, like, pencil thin wax mustache. He's like a very snidely Whiplash, like, Saturday morning cartoon villain kind of guy. He's like, he has this line where he talks to Lawrence where he's like, I'm surrounded by cattle, by these idiots and these fools, but you wouldn't understand anything about that, would you? And I thought that Lawrence was going to be like, actually, I do understand. Let's talk. Let's bond over the fact that we both think we're better than everyone else, right? But that's not how it goes. Yeah, weird scene, weird part of the movie. So after the torture, he just gets chucked out into the street, and Sharif finds him, and we fade to the pair traveling through snowy mountains on camelback. They come to a stop, and Sharif puts a blanket over Lawrence as Lawrence stares blankly into the campfire. He's traumatized again. "Sleep," says Sharif. Lawrence doesn't respond. Later, they sit around the fire, and Sharif pushes Lawrence to eat. He has a body, he says. He needs to take care of it. And then Lawrence does eat a little bit. And then we cut to Lawrence, in British uniform, returning to the headquarters in Cairo. We had a little glitch.
Mm-hmm.
This is where the glitch happened. We get this, like, less than a second shot of, like, Lawrence doing something around the campfire, and then it just cuts to him in uniform. So we may have skipped over something?
Or it may have been an editing error.
Yeah, not sure. Audience, let us know. Didn't care enough to try and find a different version. But we cut to him in uniform, returning to the headquarters at Cairo. He joins some fellow officers who ask how things are going in Arabia. Lawrence lies and tells them that nothing is happening. It's the wrong time of year. Jolly good, they say. And then they tell him about there's a new squash court. built at the headquarters.
Yeah.
Lawrence leaves them and walks through the marbled halls and up to the general's office. But as soon as he walks away from them, he overhears them as they walk away being like, oh, he comes on a little strong, doesn't he? And then he goes up to the general's office where he encounters Prince Faisal and is surprised to see him. He did not expect him there. Prince Faisal smiles and shakes his hand, and Lawrence gives him a cold salute. The smile drops from Faisal's face. Oh, we aren't friends here, I see.
Yeah.
Faisal turns to the general and says he will take his leave. Lawrence has reports to make, no doubt, on the weakness of his people. And how to keep them weak. I like the prince. He doesn't play along with the bullshit. He's like, I know what you motherfuckers are doing. Like, come on.
Yeah, but also, like, he is there in advance of, ahead of Lawrence, and he's clearly not participating in any of the combat, any of the revolt, so, like...
He's a king. Kings don't do that.
They used to.
Maybe. I don't know. Way, way back in, like, the olden times, maybe. I have my doubts. I think those are just stories.
He's also not a king. He's a prince.
Yeah.
So.
He calls himself a king later, but you're right. He's just a prince.
Yeah. The point being is that he's letting his people get killed for his cause, and he's not participating in it.
Yep. Sounds like a king to me. Sounds like a politician. I have told you, sir, says the general gruffly. No such treaty exists. Yes, replies Faisal. You have lied most bravely, but not convincingly. Treaty, sir? Breaks in Lawrence. Faisal looks at him and tells the general that Lawrence is a better liar. But then, of course, he is almost an Arab. He's saying all the quiet parts out loud.
Yeah.
And the prince leaves. The man in the suit, who is also there, asks if Lawrence really doesn't know. And Lawrence insists that he doesn't.
Mr. Dryden.
What are they talking about? Then what the devil is this? Asked the general, grabbing a piece of paper off his desk. My resignation and request to be removed from Arabia, says Lawrence. The general tells the man in the suit to tell Lawrence about the treaty. And the man in the suit says that an English civil servant and a French civil servant got together and decided that after the war they should split the Turkish Empire between their two countries, including Arabia. And they signed an agreement, not a treaty. This is some the rebels, not soldiers bullshit right here.
Yeah, like what the fuck is the difference between an agreement and a treaty? A treaty has more value because it's a political term. It's the same fucking thing.
Yeah, like... Don't tell me one bullshit word is different than a different bullshit word.
Yeah.
You're at the top, sir. You know this is all bullshit. There may be honor among thieves, says Lawrence, but there's none among politicians.
And that true.
Mm-hmm. The man in the suit tells him he must have had suspicions. A man who lies, like him, the man in the suit continues, hides the truth. But a man who tells half-lies, like Lawrence, has forgotten where he put it. Oh, yes, that's right, sir. Your lying is noble. Tell me how you sleep at night. The truth is, I'm an ordinary man, replies Lawrence. You should have told me that. And I want an ordinary job. That's my reason for resigning. It's personal. Personal, repeats the general, outraged. Are you joking? You're an officer in the field, and a damn important one. Personal, are you mad? No, says Lawrence, and I'd rather not go mad. That's my reason, too. The general rises from his chair and says he's making his push for Damascus next month. And Lawrence is a part of that push. Can he understand that? I don't want to be part of your big push.
Yeah, that's how he says it.
Says Lawrence, slamming both fists onto the general's desk. They continue to yell at each other, and the man in the suit, standing behind Lawrence, notices blood beginning to seep through the back of Lawrence's uniform. Mm. He calls to Lawrence, making him turn around so the general can see the blood too, and then takes his leave as the general invites Lawrence to the patio for a calmer chat. Just, Lawrence, and just so the general can see the blood, because Lawrence turns around to look at the guy. Man, what a snake.
They're all snakes.
Yes, they're all.
They're all snakes. There's not just one person in there. It's like all of them are snakes.
Yes, this is a pit of vipers.
Yeah.
And it was really well done, this scene, because when he turns around, you can see the general see it and very subtly just go, oh, yeah, okay. I see what's going on. We need to take a different tact with this. And then they do. The man in the suit leaves and the general takes a different tact. On the patio, the general tells Lawrence he thinks he'll be a household name when this is all over. That is, Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone will know Lawrence. But you'd have to go to a war museum to find out who Allenby is, who's the general.
Yeah.
You're a historical figure, appeals to ego. Lawrence is the most extraordinary man the general has ever met. Leave me alone, says Lawrence, turning his head. Well, that's a feeble thing to say, says the general. All right, I'm extraordinary. What of it? Lawrence shoots back. How many people have a destiny, Lawrence? Says the general. It's a terrible thing for a man to flunk it if he does. Lawrence says the general is just guessing because the general himself has admitted he doesn't have a destiny.
Mm-hmm.
What if the general is wrong? We both know I'm not, is the reply. Yes, whispers Lawrence. Ah, got him again. Every time he tries to get out, they pull him back in.
They know just how to play him.
Yep, they know what he wants to hear, that he's special and he's a hero. So yes, whispers Lawrence, defeated. The 16th of next month, says the general. Can you do it? I'll give you a lot of money. Lawrence says the best fighters won't come for money. They'll come for Damascus. He'll take it before the British arrive and keep it. Fair enough, says the general. Fair? Says Lawrence with fire in his eyes. What's fair got to do with it? It will happen because I will make it happen. They won't come for money. They'll come for me.
Yeah?
Yep. Yeah, you just gotta get him back into his hero narrative, and he'll just do the rest himself. Cut to Lawrence returning to the desert to the cheers of the gathered Arab tribes. Bentley, Tai, and Sharif are part of the crowd, and Bentley tells Sharif that Lawrence has changed. What did that Turkish general do to him?
Ooh, if only you knew.
Sharif doesn't know. And then Sharif asks what the British general did to him, and the reporter doesn't know. Sharif breaks out of the crowd and rides up to Lawrence, who is back in his Arab dress now,
mm-hmm.
as he returns. Gotta wear the right costume for the right stage.
For the right audience.
Uh-huh. And asks who the people around him are, because he's got this whole, like, personal group with him now.
Mm-hmm.
My bodyguards, says Lawrence. Sharif complains that all the bodyguards are men with prices on their heads, murderers and worse. They are not ordinary men, he says.
Yeah, well, Lawrence says he's not ordinary himself either. No, so.
I don't want ordinary men, replies Lawrence, and speeds up his camel, leaving Sharif in his wake. It's funny how Sharif, in the back half of this movie, functions as like an angel on Lawrence's shoulder when his introduction is that he's the villain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I wish they did a little more with that transition.
I wouldn't call him a villain.
He murders a dude for tribal conflict.
I know, but I feel like his head is in the right place most of the time.
Most of the time. It's only when he murders people for drinking his water. Then we get a quick scene of the British officers in a tent having a strategy meeting, and the first officer Lawrence met in Arabia is told to find the Arab army so they can keep tabs on them. The other motherfuckers know he can teleport, so he's sent to find them. We then return to Lawrence and Sharif as they watch explosions light up the horizon. It was a really beautiful scene where you just, it's night, and so you can just see the lights, like, flaring in the distance over the horizon. Mm-hmm. Bad shit is happening in the distance. Sharif feels bad for the people getting bombed, even though they're Turks. Lawrence does not feel bad. At first, Sharif says, like, God have mercy on them, and then Lawrence turns to him and says, they're the Turks, that's the enemy. And Sharif says, God have mercy on them anyway. Like, mm-hmm. What's happening to them is bad.
Yeah, like, it could as well happen to them.
Yep. Then we see the British general riding beside a column of soldiers in a car, and the officer he sent to spy on Lawrence running up and hopping in the car and telling the general that Lawrence is getting cocky and will probably beat them to Damascus, though there is a Turkish column in front of him, so if he runs into that Turkish column...
Maybe we could get rid of them?
Yeah, maybe he'll be delayed.
Yeah.
The phrase he says is, he's really got the bit in his mouth, and he keeps repeating it. That's his proper British way of saying he's getting cocky. Getting a little too full of himself. Cut to Lawrence and his army arriving at an Arab village where everyone has been slaughtered by the Turks. Everybody, just, you get this slow panning shot of the village, yeah. And it's just corpses on the ground, corpses leaning up against posts, people just, you know, dead in their doorways, just corpses everywhere, men, women, children, everybody. Lawrence looks at the corpses littering the ground with rage in his eyes, and then the army lines up behind him as he points his camel at the Turkish soldiers in the distance, because the band of Turks that did this is still within view. Like, mm-hmm. They're close to the horizon, but they're not totally gone from view yet. You can see them in the distance. They are moving away. Beside him, Sharif whispers that their goal is Damascus, but Lawrence is too lost in his anger to hear. Not this, continues Sharif. Go around. Damascus, Lawrence. Damascus. No prisoners, growls a man at Lawrence's side and walks his horse in front of Lawrence. He pulls out his sword and charges the Turkish army alone and is shot down before he reaches them. Someone whispers that was that man's village. That's why he's charging. So he pulls out his sword, and you can see Lawrence almost give the command to charge when this guy does. Like, that's almost enough to break him,
yeah.
But not enough. And then the guy charges up, and this is the horse falling scene I was talking about, because when he gets shot, he shot on horseback, and the horse falls with him.
Yeah.
Uy, hope that horse is okay. As he falls lifeless to the ground, Lawrence finally breaks, pulling out his own sword and screaming, "No prisoners!" repeatedly as the army charges at the Turks. And then Sharif is still like, "Ah, no, crap. And then everybody else charges, but Sharif is just like, "No, I don't want to."
He's like, "God damn it."
Yeah, like, this is the wrong thing to do. Like, he follows, but he follows slowly because
he follows unwillingly.
Yes, get dragged into the madness. True to their word, they leave no prisoners, and you get scenes of the carnage of them, the Turks, fighting back a little bit, but then putting their hands up and surrendering, but just getting gunned down anyway,
yeah.
And Lawrence, like, just wandering around with a gun and just fully giving himself over to bloodlust, just shooting people that are surrendering and walking up to wounded people and shooting them, and then, like, stopping, reloading his gun, and just wildly looking around for the next person to shoot.
Yeah.
He is just completely lost.
His hands are bloody, if I remember well,
yeah.
Too.
Yeah. Covered in blood, just wild look in his eyes. I told you. I told you he had the devil in him. I knew it. I saw it.
Believe it.
It got out real bad. In the middle of the carnage, Sharif finds Lawrence and tells him to order the men to stop. It's so bad that even Sharif is like, this is too much.
Yeah.
Lawrence looks at him, eyes wide with terror, and runs away. Doesn't want to be seen in this state. They did a real good job of just representing someone being lost in mental illness. It was the terror in his eyes when Sharif saw him, like, oh no, he can see me, like, what I am right now. And it was terrifying, and he ran away.
Yeah, I know this, and what I'm asking is not going to make sense, or like it's the wrong question to ask, but I kept thinking to myself, what is, apart from like becoming famous and being remembered and all that, like what the heck is his motivation for this? Like he is murdering people, just slaughtering them. Like what the heck is it to him if this Turkish tribe survives or doesn't? Like I just couldn't fathom something serious enough that like a reason that would be serious enough for him to be this involved in the fight,
to something to warrant this strong of a reaction.
Yeah.
I think it's about control. I think like this whole thing is just about control for Lawrence. That is what he's really caught up in. Like, you've got the surface of him being a good soldier, and then underneath that, he's trying to be a hero, right? But underneath that, he's really trying to assert his version of what beauty and a proper society is on everything. And like that comment earlier that the prince makes about how mercy is a passion for Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the anger of people defying what his version of reality should be. Like, you should have mercy. The Turks don't have mercy. They are ugly and need to be punished because they are not what people should be.
I understand that.
And he is the one to punish them because he's the hero.
I understand that, but this is not...
That's enough, man.
That's not his fight.
He's making it his fight.
But why? We never get to the bottom of like why he is making it his fight.
You're right. There is...
I want to know what the spark is like from the beginning. What's the first spark that makes him want to be so involved and at the center of this fight?
You're right. I don't think it's about the Arabs at all. I think that's all just like window dressing. That's what he latched onto. It's Lawrence has way deeper issues that clearly Lawrence is not even aware of. Oh, you're absolutely right. That's one of my issues with the movie is that you see some of the abyss in him, but you never get the full explanation for why that abyss is there.
Yeah.
Or like what is the source of it? Just that, Lawrence has got the devil in him. How did the devil get there?
Don't know.
The movie does not tell us, but that boy's got some demons. This was a good, the monster getting out scene. I thought it was really well done. And like behind that monster is the terror and the cowardice of people not wanting you to see you that way, to not really see what you can be.
Yeah. Well, there's also probably like for as much as you can have the devil in you, like that can also be a moment where he's scared himself.
Oh yeah, he's terrified of it.
Yeah.
Fade to the battle being over, and Sharif once again looking for Lawrence. He finds him leaning against the wreckage of a wagon, knife in hand, and covered in blood. This is what you were talking about. And he's like staring into his own reflection in the dagger. Yeah. How deep does that abyss go, Lawrence? Tell me about it. The two look at each other and then walk side by side away from the field of bodies as the sand blows around them in the desert night. Very beautiful scene, walking through this field of corpses.
It was.
And not a word spoken between them. Yep, he's just, his hands covered in blood, the knife is covered in blood. Like, yep, you went all the way, Lawrence.
I preferred that this was a silent... that they don't say anything. Like, there's nothing to me that they could say in that moment to... There's nothing to justify. There's nothing to talk about. It's just, this was fucking madness, and let's try to move away from this.
Yeah, the only thing I could think of to say in that situation, if I came upon a person like that and had that relationship with Lawrence, the only thing I could think to say would be, well, you done?
What if that awakes the monster again? Yeah. Like, that might not be the right question.
Yes, you run the risk of the answer being, no, I'm not, and then the knife coming at you. You're right.
better just always better to shut it.
Yeah, you're right. I have a bad habit of poking hornet's nests. Great scene. Although they don't... They shy away from it a little bit because they never really show the carnage happening. You get, like, all these shots of, like, Taiz there participating mm-hmm. and, like, swinging his sword but and, you know, killing people. But the sword is always, like, going out of frame, so you never see it hitting people. So you get, like, the aftermath of the carnage, but you don't really see the carnage itself.
Yeah.
It's very old Western style where Lawrence is, like, shooting people and they're just going, like, and falling over. It undercuts it a little bit, but still really good. We rejoin them after the sun has set, and moonlight falls softly through the clouds, and Lawrence sits silently atop his camel. Night in the desert, very beautiful. Gentle, soft moonlight. Bentley arrives on the scene, and after looking out on all the human wreckage, whispers, "Jesus wept." "Does it surprise you, Mr. Bentley?" asks Sharif from his camel beside Lawrence. "Surely you know the Arabs are a barbarous people. Barbarous and cruel. Who but they?" says Sharif. "Who but they?" Bentley shakes his head and calls Lawrence a rotten bloody man and says he will take his rotten bloody picture for the rotten bloody newspapers. I get it, but also, come on, all these people suddenly, like, acting like they're not part of the mess, too? Little hypocritical on Bentley and Sharif's part.
Always.
Though I like the throwing back of the barbarous thing in Lawrence's face, like, yeah, we're nuts. Come on, everybody's nuts. That was the actual message I took from, like, the slaughter thing, was that that monster is inside of everybody, but the various ethnic groups, they try to pretend it's only in the people they don't like, but mm-hmm. but it's in everybody. So he takes his rotten bloody picture for the rotten bloody newspapers, and then we fade to the next day as a man rides up to Lawrence holding a bunch of grapes. "They were plucked last night in Damascus," he says. Damascus. They're close. Lawrence asks if the British were in Damascus when the man went, and the man says they aren't. So I guess this guy just rode ahead to Damascus and got the grapes,
yeah,
and then came back. All right. And then Lawrence tells him to go tell Sharif that they're closing in Damascus. Then we cut to General Allenby arriving in Damascus and the officer telling him that Lawrence has already been there for a day and a night and taken over the town. He set up his own headquarters in the town hall. He has the power station, fire station, hospitals, and even post office. Everything, sir. His group calls itself the Arab National Council. Lawrence has gone rogue.
He's gone native.
He's gone native. He's setting up his own ruling council and taken control of all the, you know, all the actual logistical things you need in a town.
Mm-hmm.
He's making a power grab. The general asks what he thinks they should do about it, and the officer replies that they need to get them out as quick as they can. Cannot stand for this. The general then asks the opinion of the man in the suit, who tells them that if they confront them directly, they'll have a revolt on their hands. "When will Prince Faisal be arriving?" "In 2 days." "Well, we can't just do nothing," says the officer. "Why not?" replies the general. "It's usually the best thing to do." He's right.
Yeah.
He is absolutely right. You know when things go bad? When the government tries to help. You know how you make things worse? By trying making them better. You know what the right thing to do is? Fucking nothing. Like, I appreciated how... it's a pit of vipers, but they're very clever vipers,
yeah,
who understand the game.
They're aware.
Yeah, they know what's...
they're aware of themselves, and they're aware of how things work.
They know exactly what's going on. They are competent snakes. And on one hand, I appreciate their level of competence. And on the other hand, it's like, God damn, these people are snakes. Then we jump to the town hall, the headquarters of the Arab National Council, where Lawrence is trying to do everything but nothing. He is holding a meeting. The council hall is packed wall to wall with the various tribes of Lawrence's army, all talking at once in a deafening roar.
Yeah.
This is like any kind of room you see, like statecraft happening in front of cameras. Huge round table so everybody gets a seat, marble everywhere, columns, tapestries, you know, the halls of power. And it's just packed wall to war, deafening, everybody's talking at once. Lawrence has to bang the butt of his revolver on the table to call everything to order and get them to stop talking. Tai and Sharif are there. Tai, I don't know if you remember, like, stands up and walks across the table so he can crouch in front of Sharif and yell at him and point his finger in his face and then walks back across the table to get back to his seat. Great stuff. So Lawrence bangs the butt of his revolver on the table to get silence and then stands and says into the silence, "There are not tribes here, but Arabs." See, he's trying to push his version of reality on everything. "He insulted me," says Tai, pointing at Sharif. That's his response. Lawrence calmly explains to him that the accusation is that the telephones are under the care of Tai's tribe and the telephones aren't working, which is true. Tai angrily replies that the phones aren't working because of a lack of electricity and the generators are under the tribe of Sharif's control.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just finger pointing back and forth. He ends his statement with a rude gesture aimed at Sharif, who lunges at him, but is held back by Lawrence, who says to stop or there will be bloodshed. "You speak to me of bloodshed," hisses Sharif. But he backs down. Lawrence then asks the assembly why there's no electricity and is told it's because they don't know how to fix the generators. "Machines are stupid anyway," says one of the honored elders, and a chorus of agreement ripples through the crowd. This was, I don't think it was intentionally made to be funny, but I got a laugh of this, like, machines are fucking stupid anyway. And like, Lawrence just, like, what'd you fucking expect, Lawrence? This is not their culture. Like,
yeah, those are people who have probably, for a lot of them, just lived a majority of their life in the desert.
Yeah, and it's not, like, I'm not trying to look down my nose at their culture and these people, but it's,
oh, no.
It's like, they lived in the fucking desert in tents. Like, the idea that they would know how to work the generators is so stupid from Lawrence's point of view.
Yeah.
Like, fucking come on, man. These are nomadic, like, desert tribes. Like, of course they don't know how to fucking run a city. Then a man comes running into the assembly and says that there's a fire, but carrying water is beneath his tribe, so the fire is just running rampant.
Yep.
It's just, like, every tribe has their superstitions, and their superstitions just don't allow them to do anything. "Machines are stupid. We can't carry water." Like, oh my god. And Lawrence is just like in the middle of this just being like, oh my god, oh my god.
Finally, you know, realizing that he's done all this work, lost all these mans, lost his sanity, and for what? For people who can't do anything to save themselves.
Yeah, it's exactly what we were talking about earlier, where he's trying to be a hero in, like, a fairy tale, and he keeps running into the hard reality of, like, that shit doesn't work.
Yep.
That fairy tales aren't real, Lawrence. you cannot not be the white savior that leads them to glorious freedom. Like, if we just get in the city, we'll be able to run the city. Like, not how the world works.
For it to work, for the freedom to work here, what Lawrence had to realize is that, A, people have to not just want it for their own tribe, but want it for the entire Arab people.
Well, they have
to. And also just to, realize that the way things are set up is, it's just not for them.
Yeah, they need to want it, period. And,
yeah.
And it's Lawrence trying to push his view of the world on them. They don't call themselves Arabs, right? They don't do that. He does that. They don't want this. He wants this. He's trying to force it on them, and he's brought them all into this chamber, and this is like the glorious end of the farce, is them being like, "Machines are stupid. We don't carry water. We're out of here."
You're right. They don't call themselves Arab. They call themselves by the tribe name.
The tribe names. Yeah. Arab is a British thing. Lawrence is trying to voice the British perspective on them.
Yeah.
So Lawrence goes to look at the fire, and he has to push his way through a wall of people all calling for his attention. It's hundreds and hundreds. They're all just screaming at him. My issue, my problem. And he has to be like, tomorrow, we'll get to it tomorrow. And just like physically shove his way through them.
Yeah.
Then we're back with the British general and men in suit as the power goes out in the building that they're in. They hear chanting outside their window and look out to see the tribes leaving the city. They have given up. It took like a day. That's it then, says the man in the suit. And then the general says, marvelous looking beggars, aren't they?
As he looks
down on them from his balcony.
Yeah, fucking monster.
They look like ants. They are ants. Back in the now empty town hall, Lawrence, Tai, and Sharif are all that remains. There's one other guy. It's an old guy. He's asleep and snoring. Mm. It's such a great contrast because these scenes happen within like 5 minutes of each other.
Yeah.
So many people that there's no space to even sit or stand, and just deafening volume. And then we come back to it and it's four people and just booming silence.
Yeah.
Lawrence is writing on a paper, and Tai grabs it and tells Lawrence to forget all this and come with him. Tai knows his heart. Come back to the desert. This is nothing. Lawrence slowly takes his paper back and continues to write. I pray, he says slowly, that I may never see the desert again. Hear me, God. And I think that's might be the first and only time that Lawrence invokes God.
Mm-hmm.
All the tribal people do it around him all the time. Like, yeah. Sharif does it constantly. I think that's the first time where he does it.
Yeah.
Tai says there is only the desert for him and walks away, leaving only Lawrence and Sharif. Lawrence asks if Sharif is going to leave as well, and Sharif says no. He needs to stay and learn politics. And this goes back to there's an earlier scene when Mr. Bentley is interviewing Lawrence and asking him those two questions.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, he comes upon Sharif reading a book about politics.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I see you're coming over to our side of things, huh? You're gonna make your people civilized. And, like, makes a little joke about it. So this is referencing back to that. He has to learn politics. That's what he's doing. It's a low profession, replies Lawrence. I didn't think of it until I met you, says Sharif as he rises and begins to walk away. He pauses and says, you tried very hard to give us Damascus. And Lawrence softly answers that it's what he came for. Because then it would at least be something. I think what he means is that all this would then mean something.
Yeah.
And he didn't just traumatize himself and kill people for no reason.
Yeah. That's not what the reality is, though.
Yep. Sharif leaves and is grabbed by Tai as he exits the chamber. He is your friend? Taif asks. Sharif shakes him off and says not to touch him. You love him, says Tai. No, says Sharif. I fear him. Then why do you weep? Because Sharif is crying at this point. I fear him and love him. How much must he fear himself? I think that's what he says. It was kind of muffled, and there was no closed captioning on what I watched. I think that's what he says.
It does make sense with what we were saying earlier. Like, when after they assault the Turks, and Lawrence kind of escapes, he runs away. He scared himself in that.
Yeah.
And he was met with his own demon, and there's something, if you're not completely insane, there's something extremely scary in that.
Yeah, when you look at the monster and it's your own reflection. So he says that and then says, take your hand away, because Tai's grabbed him again, and he spins around and Sharif pulls out his knife. Oh, says Tai calmly, so you are not yet fully a politician. These are new tricks, and I'm an old dog, says Tai, and walks away. And it was during that little exchange that the light bulb went off above my head, and I went, oh, Sharif's in love with him. Duh.
In love with Lawrence?
Yeah. I don't think he can ever express it because of the culture he's in. But, like, he's the only one who goes to that city with him.
Yeah.
He takes care of him. Like, every time he's traumatized, he, like, nurses him back to health. He, like, tries to save him from his own demons. He weeps because he sees how broken he is and he can't save him. He's in love with him. I did not...
I guess.
I did not...
That's one interpretation.
Well, I'm also going off the, like, stuff I read online about Lawrence, and that's part of the, like, not confirmed but strong suspicion by everyone is, like, the real-life Sharif, those two had a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a romantic relationship, and that's why Lawrence, like, the real Lawrence paid him to beat him and stuff.
Right.
So, yeah. It was like, yeah, that moment in the movie for me, which is like, oh, duh. he loves him. And you just can't, there's no way to like bridge the cultural and social taboos there.
Yeah, he would be killed for admitting that.
Yeah, so he expresses that love in like the only way he can, by like being loyal to him and like trying to be a good advisor and like being the angel on his shoulder.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I like that. Sharif and Lawrence, both like deeply flawed but interesting characters.
I don't disagree.
Yeah. That's probably the biggest, like, oh, I'm an idiot moment we've had in this podcast. Like, of course he's in love with him. It's obvious in retrospect.
Well, there's other ways to... Love is one interpretation, but also, like, it could just be, like, devotion and admiration. It doesn't necessarily have to be, like, romantic.
You're right.
Love. Like, Lawrence has fully, he's gained Sharif's respect throughout the movie, at least in the first part of the movie. Sharif sees him more for his flaws in the second part, but he's definitely earned Sharif's respect at some point. So you can read it as love. You can also read it as just genuine admiration and also like worshiping.
Yeah, I think maybe the most accurate way to say it would be that Sharif cares more about Lawrence than anyone else.
Yeah,
maybe aside from himself, and he has seen Lawrence at his worst and still cares about him.
Mm-hmm.
And if seeing someone at their worst and still caring about them is not love, I don't know what love is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Really interesting. Back at the British headquarters, a medical officer is telling the general he's never seen such awful conditions in hospitals before. This is some dude we've never seen.
Yep.
The general tells him to take it up with the Arab Council because the Arab Council controls the hospitals. The general just goes, not my monkeys, not my circus. I don't know why you're yelling at me about this. The only person left of the council is Lawrence, though. So we get a quick scene of the medical officer complaining to Lawrence, and then we see Lawrence going to the hospital himself to see how bad it is. And it turns out to be very, very bad.
It's not even just bad. It's downright awful.
Yeah, it's, they have no electricity, they have no running water.
There are people just like piling up on top of each other. Yep,
they have no beds, people are just lying in the dirt. The entire scene in the background, there is the noise of flies buzzing.
Yeah.
Because people are rotting in the heat.
Because they're dead and the flies are coming around. Yep. Yes.
This is hell on earth. And
there's not even like rooms. There's barely like walls around them. They have sometimes like a roof over their head, but there's nothing to like close those rooms. Is just they may as well just be laying in the streets.
Yep. The only thing the hospital is offering is like a little bit of shade for some people.
Yeah.
Not even most people. And then Lawrence desperately looks around for like anything to help, and he goes to try and like get a pitcher of water at least for people, and there's no running water.
Yeah.
And so he can't even get water for them. So there isn't even any running water in the place, and as Lawrence looks hopelessly around at the suffering people, a British convoy arrives with supplies, the medical officer, and some nuns. "This is outrageous!" yells the officer. "Outrageous!" And he walks up to Lawrence, and Lawrence begins to laugh in his face, and the officer slaps him, causing him to fall to the ground, where he continues to laugh. He just finally broke.
Yeah.
But there's also, I think part of the way I read it was that's the moment where Lawrence sees that he never could have accomplished anything, because the only people with the actual supplies to accomplish things are the snakes.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he was doomed from the start.
Well, also, like, to me, it's like a moment where he realizes he thought he was special, but he's not. Like, there's nothing, like you say, there's nothing he could have done on his own to make this situation better. So as the realization also, like, you're breaking down because you have to come to, it's a harsh reality check.
Yeah.
That you thought you were special and you're not. You're just another piece of shit.
Yeah. And the monsters are the ones with the supplies.
Yep.
Fade to Prince Faisal speaking to the general and the man in the suit. He's telling them that his friend Lawrence pines for the green pastures of his own land. Already in his mind, he is catching trout and all the other activities of the English gentleman. The general smiles and says, "That's me you're describing, not Colonel Lawrence." "You've been promoted to colonel, by the way," he says, turning to Lawrence, who is standing at attention in the shadows. This was the way this shot is framed. Good visual metaphor, because Lawrence is just completely draped in darkness.
Yeah.
In this scene. Like, everybody else is smiling and in the light, and it just cuts to him, and he's like, it's like he's Batman hiding in the shadows. "As a colonel, you'll have a cabin to yourself on the boat home." "Thank you," whispers Lawrence. He's just completely defeated and broken at this point. "There's nothing left here for a warrior," says Faisal with a friendly smile. "Just making bargains. Old men's work. Young men make the wars. Old men make the peace. And the vice of peace are the vices of old men. Mistrust and caution. It must be so." The great universal statement, it can't be helped. Mm. Lawrence walks away without a word, and the three old men make their deals.
They've all been using him.
Oh, yeah. Puppet.
Yeah.
Lawrence was just a puppet this entire time.
They made him believe that he was special and that they respected him, and they, the entire time, just used him for their own purpose.
Yes, that is the insidious, bleak truth of the military.
Yeah.
Is that they take advantage of children and kill them to accomplish their own bleak ends, which is usually just territory grabs.
Yeah.
They tell the young impressionable men that they can be heroes. They are old monsters. We then get a scene of the offended man from the funeral at the beginning shaking Lawrence's hand. That guy who overheard Bentley talking shit about Lawrence is like, "I shook his hand once." Mm. We get to see the genesis of that, of him meeting Lawrence and, "Oh, it's such an honor. Let me shake your hand, sir." And Lawrence is like, "What? Who are you? What? Huh?"
Yeah, he doesn't even like lean in the situation where he could, you know, he could gain some of his like pride also on the spot. There's nothing. He's completely drained.
Yep, he's completely over it. Like, well, he knows that it's the hero myth is just a farce now. So it's, yeah, like, oh, this is just another person who fell for the tricks. And then we go back to the old men, where Faisal tells the general that Lawrence is a two-edged sword, and that he's sure that they are both equally glad to be rid of him. The general sits back and says that he thought he was a hard man. "You are just a general," replies Faisal. "I must be a king." There are levels to this, sir. And I operate on a deeper or higher level than you do. Take your pick. Then we cut to Lawrence being driven through the desert. They pass by a group of Arab men on camels, and Lawrence stands up, but sees no one that he recognizes. He sits back down, and the driver says, "Going home again, sir." "Huh?" "Home, sir." The camera lingers on Lawrence's blank face, obscured by the dust-caked windshield, and we fade to black. The end. God damn. I like that movie. It was not afraid to get bleak as fuck and tell the truth.
I'll give it that. It was definitely not afraid of going really deeply dark.
Yep. That man, that cabal of old men at the end, and just the prince laying it out like, the heroic bullshit is for young people. The old men make the deals. Like,
yeah.
Oof.
Yep.
Yeah, you've played your part, hero. Go away now while we cut up the corpse of the Empire. Man.
I mean, that's just the reality of things. Yeah,
this is the shape of the universe.
It's only dark because we don't hear enough of it, because it's things that happen behind closed doors, mm-hmm. and that people, I mean, and by people, I mean the government, just try to hide. But yeah, it's only bleak because we don't hear enough about it. But you know that that's the way things work.
Yeah, there was another scene I didn't put in the synopsis where the man in the suit, it's the meeting they have where Lawrence's back starts to bleed.
Mm-hmm.
The man in the suit leaves that meeting, and then Bentley's outside, and Bentley asks him what's happening behind the closed door, and the man's reply is nothing. Nothing at all. Oh, man. I like this movie a lot. It was a really interesting study of Lawrence's character and, like, the nature of the heroic myth.
Mm-hmm.
And, wanting to how narratives are made and what stories are and how heroes are really just puppets for the villains. And there's a lot of really interesting deep stuff in this movie. I wish it had been fleshed out a little bit more, if they spent less time in the desert and like more time developing Sharif and Lawrence's relationship developing, or like you said, going into more of what makes Lawrence Lawrence, though that fault I can kind of forgive, because it might be just that we don't know. There's just not information for them, and they don't want to guess.
Yeah.
And some more time, like, fleshing out the falling apart of the Arab Council. Because, man, the fact that it just falls apart, like, within a day because they can't figure out how to make the generators work, like, is unintentionally comedic.
But also, like, I don't want to make guesses, but I feel like that's also, like, true to reality.
Yeah,
like there was just no way they were going to figure it out, so everybody just gave up on it.
They like they flick the light switches a couple times, and they're like, "Well, fuck this."
Yeah. Yeah, like we don't know how many tribes there were in that Arab Council, but like let's say even if they had like 3 or 4,
too much.
That's too many people. That's too many people around the table.
Yep, too many chefs ruin the soup. Too many old blood feuds. Too much hate, too many old wounds.
Yep.
A lot better than I was expecting, though.
Yeah, I was definitely a lot better than I thought it would be.
Lawrence of Arabia.
It's still not a great movie for me, but
I liked it a lot. I appreciate that it was willing to contend with the bleak aspects of reality that so many adults try to pretend don't exist.
Yeah, I will definitely give you that. I appreciate that it fully gave in to the madness.
Yep. You want to get nuts? Let's get nuts. Yep. I like to stare into the abyss.
Yeah, be careful that the abyss doesn't stare back.
A little too late for that. Where's it going on your list?
The eternal question.
The eternal question. Where does it rank numerically? I'm not even sure of the answer myself.
I just hope that it doesn't make it to the top of your list, because it sure as fuck doesn't deserve
it. It's not better than Around the World in 80 Days. I know this for sure in my heart.
All right,
I will always choose joy over the abyss. What are you looking at?
I'm at Ben-Hur.
You're at Ben-Hur?
I guess it's going to be my new number 17.
So replacing West Side Story?
Yeah.
It is better than West Side Story,
yeah.
But below Ben-Hur for you?
Yes.
All right.
It definitely had more meat than West Side Story. But I felt more...
I don't know. There's a lot of stuff in West Side Story.
Yeah, I'm not...
Just more here?
Yeah, they're just more... For as much as I, didn't, fully enjoy the movie, I can recognize that it was trying to do... I think it was trying to do too many things for me.
I think sometimes. You're right.
It was trying to be, a political, military thriller, I guess. And also trying to develop Lauren's character, but it was too subtle for me. It was too... They could have given in more in a character. They could have done a better job at developing him. He's in a lot of the scenes, but he doesn't always, talk a lot. There was a lot of the acting on Peter O'Toole's part that was... I thought of, facial expressions.
Yeah.
I would have loved to hear more, maybe some grand speech or something like that. Just, I wanted to know more about where this guy's motivations were coming from, and I did not get that.
Yeah.
And like I said, I fully understand that there might not be anybody who knew what his motivations were.
Not even the man himself.
Maybe not even the man himself. But that's the part that's missing. I love to understand why people do the things they do and why they are who they are. So I'm strongly missing that part.
I think I read online that he was abused as a child. So I'm sure that had a lot to do with it, if that's true. New number 17 for you. It'll definitely be going higher for me. Let's see my list. All right. Here's where we're going to start for me. Rebecca's number 7 on my list. This is a better movie than Rebecca.
Okay.
This is a better movie than The Best Years of Our Lives. Is this a better movie than The Bridge on River Kwai? Yes. Because it's stronger overall. Bridge on River Kwai, the first third is the strongest third. It gets weaker as it goes on. This is, I wouldn't say strong the whole way through, but just more consistent than Bridge over River Kwai. Is this a better movie than Grand Hotel?
I have a feeling you're going to say yes.
I think it is. I think this is a better movie than Grand Hotel. Is this a better movie than West Side Story? You already confirmed that.
Well, given also that West Side Story for you is at the top of this, near the top of this is because of many goofs.
Yeah.
Yeah, there, it's not hard to top West Side Story.
Well, part of my appreciation for West Side Story, you're right, was ironic. But I also genuinely respect that movie. There was a lot of really insightful commentary in that movie. West Side Story is not completely a goof.
Yeah.
It's better than West Side Story. The question we face is this a better movie than Casablanca?
Abso-fucking-lutely not.
You are correct, it is not. This will be the new number 3 on my list.
I would have definitely questioned your sanity if you were putting this ahead of Casablanca.
I will echo the man in the suit. If I went that route, I would be facing a full-scale revolt. It is not as good as Casablanca. Lawrence of Arabia is the new number 3 on my list. The 60s have been pretty great so far.
Yeah?
For me, at least. I'm liking it more than you have so far. But, man, writing is getting way better. We're getting way more insightful.
Yeah, writing is getting way better, more insightful. But at the same time, it still feels very... I mean, it has to be, but it feels very experimental and not willing or not daring to go all the way, I would say.
I mean, a homoerotic BDSM sequence? Like, can you imagine that happening even, like, 5 years ago in these movies? We're making some progress.
I'm not denying that. I'm just saying, there's more to go, there's a long way to go for me to, like, be... deeply, fully satisfied with all the experimentation that they're doing.
Yep. Yeah, we'll see at the end of this project if these movies are still as high on the list. But for now, yeah, I'm really impressed with the 60s so far.
All right.
What's our next movie?
Tom Jones.
Tom Jones. All right. Okay. I hope it's not black and white.
No, I think it's in color.
Okay. What in the world could that be about, Tom Jones?
I'm not going to tell you. I read some of it already.
Sounds like a news anchor to me, or like a journalist.
That's a good guess, but no.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll find out next week.
Yep.
And so will you, audience. Anything else?
No, I think I'm good.
All right.
Well, I'm excited for, you know, some of the movies.
I do have something else. There's a fun fact I forgot almost until the very end. And that fun fact is that I read in the actual Battle for Aqaba, Lawrence's role in that fight is way played up in the movie, because in real life, he accidentally shot his camel in the back of the head and killed it when they were making the initial charge.
So he fell off the camel and wasn't able to fight?
Shot his camel and didn't even make it to the fight. As my dad said, attaboy, Lawrence. All right. And with that, thanks everybody for listening. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, that's it.